Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome to the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast presented by Topps. Check out Topps Project 70, celebrating 70 years of Topps baseball cards. Derek Van Riper here with El Melchior on this Sunday. Lots to dig into. Of course, this was the week in which Jared Kelnick got the call to Seattle. Unfortunately, he is not available in many leagues, so we won't get to talk about him all that much on this episode. But there are a bunch of injuries that have taken place in the last couple of days. Those injuries are shaking up playing time situations in a lot of different cities, so lots to dig into there. We've got our usual two-start pitcher segment. We'll dig into some one-start pitchers as well. And there are actually a few relievers of interest to consider bidding on or picking up this weekend as well. Let's get right after it, though, Al. As I mentioned, Jared Kelnick, if he's out there in your very shallow league, of course you want to go get him. He's an impact player, a guy that could be a top 40, top 50 outfielder pretty easily the rest of the way, given the role, given the talent. But we're not going to spend a lot of time breaking him down. There are two Cardinals outfielders that we talked about, I think, last week and again on Fantasy Baseball in 15, and they're still among the better options available in some leagues. It's Tyler O'Neill and Harrison Bader. With O'Neill, we're getting plenty of power. 8 home runs now on the season, but a 2-35 walk-to-strikeout ratio so far in 104 plate appearances. The power's there, but I'm starting to become a little concerned given what we're seeing with those plate skills.
And rightfully so, DVR. The things with O'Neill and with Bader, you can take two different approaches to this, and you can take a look. And obviously, it's going to matter in terms of your depth of league. If you're talking 14, 15 teams and these players are available, then, yeah, I think you need to look at that skills profile and think about how much are these players going to hurt or help you rest of season. But I think O'Neill especially, but really Bader too, even though the Cardinals have a 5-game week coming up, that these are players to consider streaming because they've got 2 games against the Pirates, 3 against the Cubs. Here are the starting pitchers that they are projected to face this week. JT Brubaker, Trevor Cahill, Kyle Hendricks, Advert Alzolay, and Zach Davies. Now, it could be an easier set of matchups than that. Brubaker can be tough. Hendricks may be coming around. Alzolay is just flat out good. But I think this could be a big week for the Cardinals hitters, and O'Neill and Bader could be two of the more available ones. So I'm looking at them, and especially O'Neill with the power potential for my 12 teamers this week.
Yeah, and I think you're definitely right to point out the schedule being a little lighter. I think these are two guys that will play probably all 5 of those games, though. So for teams that have heavier schedules with more of an outfield rotation, 6 or 7 games may end up being 4 or 5 starts for a lot of the alternatives that are out there. So that's still something to consider as well. And then you look at next week's schedule. I'm always looking an extra week out when I'm thinking about pickups. It's a full 7-game week for the Cardinals next week as well, with a few good pitching matchups sprinkled in there, too. They got the White Sox and the D-backs if we're looking far ahead. I'm a little surprised that Bader's available in about 80% of CBS leagues. I think O'Neal's available in more like 40% of leagues at this point, so it seems like he's been a lot more popular the last couple of weeks. The thing with Bader that's really caught my eye is the strikeouts are down. Only 8 strikeouts in 57 plate appearances so far. Not enough to say that he's completely changed his profile as a hitter, but definitely a big step in the right direction for a guy that has shown a bit of swing and miss in his profile in the past.
Yeah, and again, with that short-term look ahead, whether it's 1 week or 2 weeks, you know, you can take the risk that maybe he regresses in that regard, and he can still, even with a few more strikeouts, take advantage of some really good matchups ahead.
Absolutely. I think you might have brought up Dalton Varsho at some point in the last week, either on this show last Sunday or on Fantasy Baseball in 15. I'm going to be honest, all the shows have started to blur together for me in the last few weeks, and we're happy to have Michael Beller rejoining the mix here during the upcoming week, so maybe I'll start to know what day it is and what show I'm on once he's back. But Dalton Varsho's situation is quietly getting better because the Diamondbacks are hurt everywhere. And we'll see Steven Vogt behind the plate because I think the Diamondbacks still have, you know, some questions as to how much they trust Varsho behind the plate at the big league level right now. But in leagues where Varsho's still out there, of course, he has catcher eligibility everywhere. He's got to be among the priority pickups when you start looking at how thin that depth chart has become in Arizona.
Yeah, there's got to be playing time for him, no question, with how thinned out that roster is at this point. So he rightfully belongs in this list of hitters to pick up this week, and not only to stream for the coming week, but for a few weeks ahead, most likely.
So when you're talking about Varsho compared to Bader and O'Neal in leagues where all of those guys are available, are they 5% of your budget range guys, maybe even a tick more for someone like Varsho, given the state of the catcher pool? Like, how aggressive are you going to be with these higher end bats that are available?
I think the deeper the league, then the more it makes sense to go into that 7.5% category of fab expenditure for Varsho, or really for any of these hitters that we've talked about so far. You know, if you're talking about a relatively shallow league, even with Varsho's ceiling probably being higher than a lot of your catcher alternatives, I still think that that's going to be a fluid position for a lot of people, especially in shallow leagues. And so it just, to me, it doesn't make sense to go more than 2 or 3% on any catcher that is likely to be out there.
He's been playing mostly center field lately. Ketel Marte starting to make some progress toward a return, but the injury that really changes things is Asdrubal Cabrera is going to miss some time. He's been playing a lot of first base, so with the Diamondbacks, they have so many guys who can play multiple positions. You shuffle everybody around, and there's still a decent amount of playing time available for Varsho even after Marte gets back into the equation. And if you think back to draft season, also known as projection season, you go back and you look at Dalton Varsho. I think he had a pretty clear like top 10 projection among catchers, in part because of those steals. And I think the projections actually like him a little bit as a hitter too, because of what he was doing in the upper levels of the minors. So I'm with you on that bid range. I think all three of these players absolutely fit there. So for Steven Vogt, do you just see him as kind of a two catcher league glue guy, mostly an NL only filler at this point?
Yeah, bingo. That's exactly how I would describe him.
All right, let's move on, and let's get to the Dodgers situation, which is really tricky to figure out. They are the surprise team that apparently is bringing in Albert Pujols, so I was stunned to see that pop on my phone on Saturday. I was like, really? The Dodgers, of all the teams, like a smart team that I think generally does things the right way, like they're adding the player that I didn't think had anything left in the tank. So maybe there's something I'm not seeing in Pujols' profile, but what happened over the weekend, Corey Seager suffered a broken hand. He is going to miss a lot of time. With Seager down, Gavin Lux probably just moves over and is the regular shortstop. And because AJ Pollock is out right now, because Cody Bellinger is out right now, a lot of the usual suspects who can move around have spots to call their own. So Chris Taylor's playing a lot of center field. With Pollock down, we're seeing Luke Rayleigh get some run in left. I mean, they're getting really thin on that depth chart. Matt Beatty's playing a lot right now, too, and he's probably the most interesting player of all these guys because what looked like a temporary run of playing time for him last weekend is looking like a more extended run of playing time now. And then the other name that kind of catches my eye, at least until Zach McKinstry comes back, is Sheldon Noisy, because he might be the guy that actually picks up the playing time at second base. Beatty playing mostly for Pollock, and then Noisy playing mostly for Seager, who's basically got Lux in his spot at shortstop.
Yeah, I think that both Beatty and Noisy have some appeal now. But this is the thing with the Dodgers that, you know, even with these injuries, that they have so many quality players and quality versatile players that I don't have a whole lot of faith that Noisy in particular is really going to get a whole lot of run, because you can move Max Muncy or Chris Taylor over there. As you mentioned, Zach McKinstry will be back fairly soon. And what we have seen in the past, though, is that when the Dodgers have been a bit thin, that they have given Beatty a lot of playing time. I like him a lot, especially to stream against right-handed pitchers in daily leagues or weekly leagues where the Dodgers have a lot of righties coming up. He's a terrific option, and I have much more confidence that he's going to play often enough to have some value in 15-team mixed leagues as opposed to Noisy, who I'm not so confident in with that depth of a league, more of an NL-only option as far as I'm concerned there.
Yeah, I think you're right to say if Noisy probably doesn't fit in mixed leagues for now. If there's a keeper or dynasty element, I think he's been on the fringe for those leagues for a little while because of what he's done in the upper levels of the minors. But I would still be careful with him in a 15-team league, mostly because if they sign Pujols, they probably tend to play him a little. If they're going to play Pujols, they have to play him at first base. If they play Pujols at first base, Max Muncy moves over and plays second, right? And that comes at the expense of Noisy. So he's a watch list guy for deep mixed leagues. And if Pujols is strictly a bench player, we learned that over the course of the week, then we could be talking about Sheldon Noisy again next week, depending on the timetables and where some of these other players are at. But I think you're right to be more interested in Beatty. Do you actually like him as much or more than the Cardinals outfielders that we discussed temporarily, even though both O'Neill and Bader look like they have more secure long-term playing time? If you're just playing the short game because of injuries, is Beatty the better pickup?
It's close. It's really close. Given that these are all players that I would be looking at in this weekend's FAB, that I would be giving preference to the Cardinals outfielders just because of concern about the playing time for Beatty. Like I said, relative to the other options on the Dodgers bench, that I do like him better, but I still don't expect him to play every day. I certainly expect him to sit a lot against lefties. As you mentioned yourself, DVR, there's no reason to really have questions about O'Neill or Bader sitting during the next couple weeks.
Yeah, they are locked in, and defense is a big part of that too for the Cardinals. Lack of depth also factors in. Let's move over to Boston and talk about Michael Chavis for a moment. He had a chance to lead off against a lefty earlier this week, then he led off against a righty, and he's getting playing time at second base, which is good because that means there's a chance he could coexist with Bobby Dalbec. Unfortunately, you look at the lineup on Saturday, and Marwin Gonzalez was playing second, Dalbec was at first, and I don't know. Like this looks like a situation where Chavis could play 60 to 75% of the time, but if he's flipping between the top spot in the order and the bottom spot of the order, and the playing time just dips every couple of days, I don't know how rosterable he is in mixed leagues, even though I think he's talented enough to be a mixed league player if the playing time goes up. So I'm curious to know, what are you doing with Chavis based on what we've seen here over these last few days?
Yeah, I'm ignoring him in weekly mixed leagues. Really a great target in daily leagues, because he's terrific to stream when he's at the top of that Red Sox lineup. But given that, as you pointed out, we don't know how frequently we're going to see that. It's just too much risk to deal with in a weekly league that's not nail only. So, there's certainly more reliable options out there for playing time.
Let's talk about Nomar Mazara. He came back from the IL somewhat recently. Is he just back to his usual big side platoon guy role for now? I mean, I think I looked at him coming into the season as someone who might have been undervalued because the Tigers could afford to give him 450 or 500 plate appearances, hit him in the middle third of the order, and just see if he could start to become the player he was expected to be earlier in his career when he came up through the Rangers system. Do you still see that sort of appeal, or do you just see more of a what you see is what you get kind of player who hits kind of an empty 260 with 18 to 20 homers when the season's over if he holds the playing time that he's supposed to hold?
Yeah, no, that's my expectation is what you have seen is what you're likely to get from Mazara. Maybe he'll fool us in a positive way, but we've seen the same thing from him for quite a while now. So especially with him in that Tigers lineup, you know, not a lot of run production upside for him anyway. So I'm keeping my expectations pretty modest for Mazzara.
Yeah, same here. I think he's a near min-bid sort of player if you're just looking for some playing time in the outfield, because it's probably a 75 to 80% share, given that they're going to rotate some younger players in there. He has to hit more than he's hit so far if he wants to play more and have the Tigers justify that sort of decision. I was flipping through one of the pages on RotoWire is a playing time changes grid. So it looks at any set period of time and gives you like a plus minus on number of plate appearances compared to the same time frame previous. So you can look at the last 5 days versus the previous 5 days and see who's up and who's down. And Matt Duffy is a guy who's playing a ton right now. So if you're looking for just pure volume on the infield and maybe a decent batting average, not necessarily a lot of power, Duffy was one of those guys that I thought in a deep league, a 15-team mixed league or anything deeper, he might actually be a passable glue guy if you're looking for someone like that this week.
Yeah, and if we compare him to Mazzara, I actually would rather have Duffy because I think the playing time is going to be steadier. And I also think that if you're, you know, you're talking about empty batting averages, I think Duffy's batting average is going to be higher than Mazzara's, quite likely by a good margin. Maybe not as much power potential, but probably more run production. So comparing those two, if you need a hitter to plug in, I'm prioritizing Duffy.
Yeah, 7-game week for the Cubs too. So high volume guy with a high volume schedule. It seems like a good temporary cheap option if you need some help in the infield. You wanted to bring up a few Nationals. Josh Harrison's a guy that we probably could have talked about last week, but every time I look at him, every time I see his playing time go up, I think that's the same old Josh Harrison. There's nothing to be excited about here. Like that little window a couple years ago in Pittsburgh, that's closed, and he's just a guy. He's just a Matt Duffy type player at this point in his career, not somebody that we need to get all that excited about. But am I missing the mark with Josh Harrison?
I don't think you are. So this is just strictly a weekly play that I'm looking at here. But I think that the comparison with Duffy is really a good one. And batting average guys aren't that easy to find anymore. So in a week where the Nationals have a really great schedule, 4 games at the Cubs, 3 at the Orioles, with no John Means scheduled. And in the weekly planner, the next week in fantasy baseball, as we call it on The Athletic, at that point, it looked like Means was lining up to face them. And I still thought that there were several Nationals hitters that were worth streaming this week. And again, we're talking more 14-15 team mixed league. But Harrison could score some runs and help your batting average over the course of this week. And I would add Starlin Castro, who had been pretty hot at the time that I wrote that piece a couple days ago, and Yan Gomes, who I'll certainly be looking at as my Carson Kelly replacement for the coming week. So I think those three and just about anybody else that's out there from that lineup is a worthy streamer. I would certainly think you'd be giving Victor Robles a look maybe if he's available in your leagues.
Yeah, I know there are people out there who aren't me who are frustrated with Victor Robles. I'm frustrated, but they've been frustrated enough to cut him. And live your life, choose for yourself. I'm holding because I'm stubborn and maybe stupid, but mostly stubborn at the very least. Castro is like the ultimate oatmeal guy. I'm always surprised to see him pop up on mixed league waiver wires because he plays a lot. He's not going to hurt you in batting average most of the time. Run production could actually be a tick above average. So I'm there, right there with you on him. I think there's actually a little more long-term appeal there than there is for other players that we're talking about at this part of the group of hitters. And Yan Gomes, I was also surprised to see, I think his roster rate was in the 30% range on CBS. Mm-hmm. He's playing pretty well, and he's got a large share of the playing time in DC as well. So I do think Gomes should be more heavily rostered at this point. There were two names that popped on that aforementioned playing time page I was looking at, Tucapita Marcano and Brian O'Grady, but they're only playing more this week. I've played more this week because of the COVID situation with the Padres. That will likely go away in the near future. With that, both of those guys will probably end up losing all their playing time. So if you just notice that those guys have played a lot, I don't think you want to go after them, even in NL-only leagues, expecting anything more than sort of scrap playing time once everybody is back in the fold for the Padres, and it really shouldn't be a whole lot longer before that happens.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, Al, let's get to starting pitchers. Lots to break down in this group. I felt like every time I saw a two-start pitcher on the schedule, I kind of had that, I don't think I want to use this guy sort of reaction. There are a couple that we'll get to that might actually work. It just seems like the matchups came up in a way where lower-end guys didn't get good matchups and they're easy avoids. And even someone who's pitched really well, like Madison Bumgarner, this could be the week where the momentum stops. He's got the Dodgers, and they're banged up, but in Dodger Stadium, and then he's got the Rockies at Coors. Do you trust Bumgarner enough, based on what you've been seeing lately, to roll him out there in these matchups? And if so, what's the league cutoff? Is it okay for NL only, but not okay for a 15-teamer, or okay in a 15-teamer, but not necessarily good enough in a 12? Because there has to be a point to draw the line with those two matchups, and I'm not entirely sure where it is, because I think I'm struggling to figure out how much I actually trust Bumgarner even in good matchups right now.
I trust him with good matchups. These are not good matchups. He actually was the player that I led off the Next Week in Fantasy Baseball piece with, because this is just a really, really tough dilemma. But I lean on the side of not starting him in most leagues. I think you got to start him in NL onlys. I don't even think that that's going to be controversial. If you're looking at your roster, you're just not going to find an alternative. But in mixed leagues that are 15 teams or shallower, I'm staying away. Even in 15 teamers, because while the Dodgers have had their offensive scuffles and they've lost Corey Seager, I just think that's a deep, tough lineup that can run up the score on any pitcher practically at any time. And then at Colorado, that one kind of speaks for itself, but it's sort of the worst possible situation at Colorado, where he's going to get them coming straight from San Diego. So from an environment where there's going to be a ton of movement, the Rockies hitters probably, scuffling as they typically do on the road, but then coming back home and just, seeing a fastball like a beach ball when Bumgarner is on the mound. So I would just absolutely avoid him wherever I could.
Yeah, let's go to another blast from the past who I think we're probably both avoiding this week. It's Matt Harvey. It's a good story if he pitches well this year. He's got the Rays on the road, the Nationals at home. I just couldn't talk myself into him. I think even in an AL-only league, I'd probably throw a reliever instead of Matt Harvey this week. I mean, you got a low K rate so far this season too, so you're not getting that strikeout bump that you often get from a two-start pitcher where you can take on the risk of the ratios, but know that in two starts you're probably going to get 10 strikeouts. I don't think you can confidently say that about Harvey at this point.
Yeah, I think confidently is the operative word there, because I wouldn't be shocked if he came away with a really good result from this week. But no, I wouldn't start him. And I think DVR, maybe any podcast I'm on, we need to start a weekly segment like, here's what I was wrong about this week, because I was very wrong about Matt Harvey going into this past week with that start against the Mets. I just thought that was a great matchup and that he had done a really nice job managing contact the season up to that point. But that's a high wire act when you stream guys like that, especially with one start. And so that for me just kind of took Harvey off of my willing to experiment with list. If he does great this week, then, that's terrific. And maybe that gets him on track for me to consider him again later in the season. But no, way too much risk there.
Yeah, I'm just worried that you're going to get 9 to 10 innings and probably 7 or 8 runs allowed. And maybe you get 8 or 9 Ks. But so low win probability, not enough of a strikeout boost to justify it. And ratios that are just sending you the wrong direction. So passing on Harvey with those matchups. What are you doing with Zach Davies this week? He's home against the Nationals, road against St. Louis, so a pitcher-friendly environment for the road matchup makes me feel pretty good, and an easier park opportunity being home at Wrigley for the tougher matchup against the Nats. Like, maybe I'm a little more confident in Davies turning things around than I should be, but I still think he's the kind of guy who's really overachieved for his career as a whole in a way that's kind of sustainable. I think inducing weak contact is a skill that Zach Davies possesses. So despite the gross ratios we've seen for the season, I actually kind of like Zach Davies as a two-start pitcher this week.
I think like is too strong a word for me, but tolerate will do. because I, for all the reasons you just said, he's got a long track record of success with ratios that doesn't add up to success for most other pitchers, but he hasn't been most other pitchers for the last few years, and it does look like he's starting to turn it around. I am not close to confident in him, but it's the sort of thing where if it's a league, particularly like a points league, where I can see how my opponent's lining up, and maybe they have a lot more two-star pitchers, and I just need to do something a little sneaky to try to keep pace, then Davies would be exactly the sort of pitcher I would want to slot in there. But I would be looking at my alternatives in any sort of league situation this week and would be perfectly fine with passing on him as well.
See, the thing for me with Davies is that I think even in deeper mixed leagues, he's not going to cost much. If you're talking about a 1% to 2% bid, I think that's enough to be competitive in most circumstances because, like Harvey, he doesn't strike a lot of guys out, so people lower their expectations based on that. And then he's got the ratios blow up already on the resume, so I think that keeps the price down a little bit as well. So I think he's a decent cheap option, maybe a contingency option behind a couple of these other names that we'll get to here over the next few minutes. I'm kind of intrigued by John Lester with the matchups, but the skills just look awful. And it's like the Zach Davies profile with a higher walk rate. So am I just talking myself into Lester as a contingency option because I don't like most of the other two-start pitchers, or is there some reason to be a little bit optimistic about Lester?
No, you're just talking yourself into him.
That's what I figured.
You know, to be fair, we talked about him a little bit this past week after his most recent start on Fantasy Baseball in 15 because I did see these matchups. They're really good matchups. And so I thought it was just worth kind of tossing around. But you know, when it comes right down to it this weekend, I don't feel confident at all. And if the two of them are out there, Davies and Lester, and I'm in that scenario where I feel like I maybe will need to play catch up in a head-to-head scenario, I'm going to go with Davies and not with Lester.
I think we could maybe get to the point in leagues with daily moves where you could talk yourself into Lester against the Orioles later in the week as a pickup and stream option. But I don't think you want to make that commitment in a weekly league at this point. Sam Hentges. Yeah, who? Sam Hentges is getting starts for Cleveland right now. And he's a fourth-round pick in 2014, 24 years old, a 6'6 lefty. That's kind of interesting. Has a fastball averaging 95, has two other pitches, has a curve and a slider. Kind of a relative out-of-nowhere guy, someone who didn't have a ton of success moving through the minors, but also, you know, without a 2020 season, could have had a breakout last year at AAA or something that would have made us excited about him had there been a season. So I don't want to completely dismiss the possibility that Cleveland has, in fact, turned out another useful starting pitcher, because I would have been similarly dismissive to Zach Plesac when he first came up if I had a time machine and went back and listened to what I said or read what I wrote back then. So my issue here with Hentges is that you're getting the Angels on the road and the Twins at home, and even if he's more interesting than the pedigree or what we know about him so far would lead us to believe, those are not places where I want to experiment. So it's another case where, hey, that's kind of interesting. Oh, those matchups aren't good. So what are you doing with Hentges where available? Is he in the Davies conversation as a near min-bid pickup, or are the matchups keeping you away from him?
Matchups are absolutely keeping me away from him because I don't particularly like him more than John Lester, and I'm extremely squeamish about starting Lester with those really favorable matchups. So I'm not looking at Hentges in any kind of mixed league. I will be starting him in my AL-only league where I do actually have him, but you know, we know how onlys go. It's just if somebody's got a rotation spot, they are picked up. And he's the last guy in my AL-only rotation with two starts. He will roll for me and hopefully will not hurt me in the standings this week.
Yeah, my hope is that he's not so amazing in this two-start week for someone else or on the wire where he becomes expensive, because I do think later on, if he's pitching well, there might be a few spots where he streams if, in fact, he's able to stick in the Cleveland rotation. And I think with the struggles of Tristan McKenzie, there's a window open right there for a guy like Hentges to stick around longer than expected. But I'm with you. Short-term appeal is basically zero at this point, so I don't think I'm bidding in any mixed leagues. A shame, really, Logan Webb at Cincinnati, home against the Dodgers, a guy that is showing some signs and at least bringing Ks, but I don't think I can do this one either.
I can't either. It is not an accident that I left him out of this edition of Next Week in Baseball. I mean, I guess I could have put him in and, as a caution, but yeah, not a streaming option this week outside of really deep leagues.
You could just have a button. I could just push the button and have you say that on a loop. Not an option this week, because it's just like we're breaking it down and trying to tell you why it's not going to work in most of these cases. Those are just two brutal matchups. I mean, with Webb, he needs home park matchups in San Francisco. He needs at least one good home start in a two-start week to be used at this point, and simply does not have one with the Dodgers, even the banged-up Dodgers coming to town for that second turn. Jay Happ is out there, at least in some 12-team leagues, probably in some 15 teams as well. He's got the White Sox at home, Cleveland on the road. Where have the strikeouts gone for Happ? The ratios look pretty good until his most recent outing, but getting rocked his last time out doesn't exactly instill confidence. The K rate being down, to me, is a sign of Happ maybe just showing his age a little bit. Am I too mean? Is Jay Happ actually still useful, or is this the beginning of the end of a guy that's actually probably exceeded expectations for the better part of the last 5 years?
I don't know if it's the beginning of the end, because it seems like maybe we've said that about Jay Happ before, but this is just not the time to be starting him. So yeah, like you mentioned, he had a rough start the last time out. It seemed like that kind of start was bound to happen for him, because not only are the strikeouts down, but there's really not anything in his profile that had explained the success that he was having earlier in the season. It just seemed like one of those kind of random small sample snapshots that you can see from, you know, anybody kind of getting by without a great skills profile. So I'm not trusting Happ in mixed leagues, period, for this week, and really for the foreseeable future.
And there was one more name that caught my eye. If you're in the type of league where you have to be 1 week ahead on two-start pitchers to avoid spending too much money on them, Matt Shoemaker, who has not pitched well this year, next week has the Orioles and Royals at home. And I like those matchups for just about anybody. I know Shoemaker hasn't pitched well. I don't think he's this bad. He's home against the White Sox this week, so it really is a pick him up and put him on the bench for a week and then use him for a two-start week and basically get him for a mid-bid this week instead of having to pay 2, 3, 4% of your budget next week when that two-start week comes up. Do you trust Shoemaker at all for those two great matchups? Do you want to stash him in leagues where you have the luxury of that reserve spot available?
Not really, no. I don't know that there's a team that I trust Shoemaker to keep in the park. So, I'm really avoiding him. And just to give you an idea of how I am valuing Shoemaker so far this year, I have him in, it's a league that I've mentioned on shows a few times so far, very, very deep 24-team mixed league. And I'm basically toggling him back and forth in my last rotation spot with Merrill Kelly, kind of based on matchups. All things being equal, I actually like Kelly a little better. So I'm only starting Shoemaker in this super, super deep league if I have absolutely no other options. So even with a pretty nice looking two-step, he's not an automatic start in a very, very deep league for me.
There you have it. Probably the least inspiring group of two-start pitchers that we have seen yet this season. Not because of the skills, but because of the matchups, the on the rise types just getting completely crushed by their respective schedules here in the upcoming week. Let's see if we can find some one-start pitchers. This group actually does have a lot of good spots to pick from, so even though you're not getting two starts from a lot of your waiver pickups, one start from most of these guys will be really good. Logan Gilbert, more widely available than Jared Kelnick. Both players, of course, came up and debuted on Thursday. Logan Gilbert gets the Tigers his second time out, Al, and there's clearly some long-term ceiling here. And I think because he didn't come out and completely dominate in his first start, bids are going to be high, but not through the roof ridiculous. If he'd gone six scoreless with nine Ks, it would have been 25% of the budget or more in some really aggressive leagues. I think we're probably talking more like 10 to 15% in more competitive leagues. Maybe you can get him for a tick less than that a few places. Even if you have some concerns about him long term, just about anybody against the Tigers is usable. So I think you have to at least think about Logan Gilbert with a keep him honest bid, even if you're not necessarily interested in beyond this week.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that assessment. And there's got to be some way he's going to help you at some point this season. And just to make a comparison here, you know, Daniel Lynch, who just got sent down, and understandably so, I'm holding him where I picked him up because, yeah, I just think that he's just too good to not be a contributor at some point. He'll figure things out. So Gilbert, I would expect, will be better than Lynch, and don't expect him to get sent down. But yeah, certainly worth the pickup, and then you can, you know, figure out if he fits into your rotation this week after you get him.
And I think he's got enough long-term appeal to be rostered at least in 12-team leagues for a few weeks, kind of to see how it goes. Four pitches with command, as we've said a few times on our shows, that usually plays pretty well. If you're playing the look-ahead to next week's schedule game, and they are using a six-man rotation right now in Seattle, Gilbert would match up on the road against the A's for his third big league start. So that's not necessarily a spot where I'm locked into avoiding him. We'll have the benefit of more information. We'll see if he was maybe overthrowing his pitches in that debut a little bit. It kind of just felt like, for a guy who was supposed to have good command, he didn't necessarily have his best command in that debut, but that's not really that much of a surprise. You imagine the adrenaline's pretty high, and a young pitcher like that's just trying to keep everything in check that first time out. So I'm erring on the side of picking up Gilbert with the long view in mind. And again, 10% is probably a really competitive bid in a lot of leagues. If you got to go a little higher, if you're playing in NFBC leagues or something more competitive, you know, 12 to 15% might be what you have to do to get it done. Let's talk about Rich Hill for a moment. I was surprised to see he's still out there in some shallow leagues. I realized he was a guy that 3 weeks ago, Frank Stamfel and I were talking about him as someone you might have to cut. And I think since that show, Rich Hill has been awesome. He's on the road against the Orioles. Would much rather have him get that matchup at the Trop, but is he fixed? Is he good enough to go ahead and pick him up in leagues where he's available and throw him out there in a hitter-friendly environment?
The peripheral suggests that he is fixed, and my only question about Rich Hill is how deep will he go in this start? And I think, correct me if I'm wrong, DVR, I think this is now three starts in a row for him of six innings. But it's just with the Rays, you know, it seems like other than Tyler Glasnow, there's nobody who's potentially immune from getting piggybacked. So I think that that's just a weekly risk that you'll take with Rich Hill. But I do like the matchup, even with the venue. I love the skill set we're seeing from him, and I'm willing to take that risk of getting three or four innings from him. And I tend to think that you'll probably get more than that.
Yeah, I think they want him to be a source of innings. I don't think they're trying to preserve him the way they might be trying to preserve Luis Patino, for example. And maybe this applies a little bit to Shane McClanahan as well, but I think that's more of a long game sort of play, where they want him to be used like a regular starter in July and beyond, or maybe even in June and beyond. So they've had to be more careful with him in May. But I think with Rich Hill, if you look at the total batters faced, which is, I've tried to do this now in game logs on Fangraphs for a while, like how many batters are guys facing when they're pitching well? Are they able to get 20 plus? Or when they pitch well, are they getting like 18 to 22 before they get the hook? If it's the latter, that to me is the sign of someone that they don't necessarily trust the third time through the order. But you see a few 22s, 23s, 26s at the game log for Rich Hill. 26 was last time out against the Yankees. So I think it's really more just about how good he is on any given day, and less about manipulating his workload because of concerns about his efficiency. He either has it or he doesn't. And against the Orioles, even though it's in Baltimore, I'm in. You know, I feel like the ultimate flip-flopper here, but we're getting K's. The walk rate's not terrible. Home run rate's kind of around its normal sort of level, 1.29 for the season, or 1.2 homers per nine for the season. Like, all of those things kind of add up. Those are in line with my expectations for Hill. I'm mad at myself for bailing a few weeks ago in a few places and having him reserved for some of those good outings that really helped to bring those ratios back to very competitive levels.
Yeah, well, we've all been there, DVR. But I think, you know, now the coast is clear and you just get him in your rotation.
Let's talk about another guy that's been a topic of conversation a few times recently, Wade Miley. No big deal, just a guy who's thrown a no-hitter, available for a home start against the Giants. And the Giants are better than we expected coming into the season. I think it's fair to say that. But they have a 98 WRC plus. They strike out more than 25% of the time as a team. So they're definitely not a matchup to fear. I assume you're comfortable throwing Miley against them at home wherever he's available.
I wouldn't say wherever he's available, and it maybe it's not a question of discomfort. It's just a question of, I mean, if we're going to be literal of must, you know, literally use must start in 10 and 12 teamers, I'm pretty confident I can find a one or two start option that I like as much or more. But if I can't, then yes, I am, and I'll use your word, then I am comfortable.
Let's throw him on the mix of contingency options to consider with one start that'll work at least in 15 teamers. I think I'd probably put him on a contingency list in a 12 if I needed a start this week and wanted to get a chance at picking up a cheap win. Mike Minor is probably in a similar class right now, even though Miley's results have been better. I think when you look at Mike Minor, you see a 1.19 whip on the season. ERA is just over 5 at 5.02. Those numbers don't usually fit together. Usually you get about a 4 ERA or even a high 3s when you have a whip in that range. Minor will get the Tigers this week at home, so I love that start. And there might be some appeal even beyond this week because he'll have the Rays, who I am not afraid of. They strike out enough where I'll take my chances with mid-range pitchers against the Rays more often than not. So what is your interest level in Minor? Is it comparable to Miley, or is it actually closer to someone like Rich Hill?
I'd say probably closer to Miley, and I do seem to like Miley more than most, so that's not intended to demean Mike Minor in any way. So I would put him in the same category of comfortable starting him, fairly confident I can find somebody I like even more.
You'll have to talk me into this one. Vince Velasquez, home against the Marlins. I can't do it. The skills look similar to always. Missing bats, but flaws, right? Walks, homers are still a problem. I mean, in a 15-teamer, maybe for a buck at the bottom of my list, but I'd rather throw Miley. I'd rather throw Minor out there. I don't believe in him. And it's one of those things where when that start comes up, if I play DFS that night, I might stack Marlins. Like, I might just do that and hope that the Vince Velasquez train derails for an outing.
You never know when that's going to happen. So I do believe in Vince Velasquez. I know that he exists. But if I could have any one of Gilbert, Hill, Miley, or Minor, why would I mess with Vince Velasquez? I will not.
I feel like that's what the rest of this group is like for the most part. But we'll see if we like any of these guys more than Vince Velasquez. That's our bar at this point. Tarek Skubal at Seattle, still looking for the first win of the season, looking for win number one. That Mariners lineup, to me, is still very beatable, even with Kelnick in it, right? It's not a deep lineup at all. I mean, you got three or four hitters up top that are good, but you got a bottom half that is kind of a quad A group for the most part. Is Skubal streamable?
Not yet. I really was high on him earlier in the season as somebody who could make up for last season because the peripherals were much better than the surface stats, but sort of like, and I'm trying to remember, oh yeah, talking about Shoemaker not trusting him to keep any team in the park, and kind of a similar feeling about Skubal. So I just need to see a run of some success from him, so I'm passing.
That's a pretty watchable matchup, though. He's actually on the other side of the Logan Gilbert start, so that should be a fun fun game to tune in for. If you were looking to just get a look at Gilbert, you also get a look at Skubal that day as well. Jose Urania comes up almost every week because no one wants to pick him up at Kansas City. Maybe it's a good enough matchup, Al, but I just don't see anything new in his profile. This is the same guy we saw for years in Miami who kind of has decent stuff, but never seems to get that much out of it.
Yeah, that's right. And I've given up on waiting for the strikeouts that you think would fit his profile, but he is getting a lot of ground balls. So I think there is something to the success, kind of like Ivan Nova 2.0, back when Nova was fantasy relevant, and that when Urania is good, he can go really deep into starts. I think he'd be a candidate for a complete game. Could certainly go 6 and 7 innings when he's going well, but you just never know when it's not going to go well for him. But Royals, kind of a borderline matchup. I would start Urania in a pretty deep league, but otherwise he's maybe in the discussion of options I'm considering, but probably ultimately not winding up in the rotation.
At best, a 15-team, $1 bottom-of-the-list type guy, which kind of puts him in the Miley range, but lower than Miley for sure. Like at the bottom of the Miley tier, I think, is the best I could do with Urania at this point. Jeff Hoffman, home against the Brewers. Brewers are struggling in a big way right now, and if we were to know for sure that Yelich and Hira are still going to be away, and Yelich working his way back at AAA, Hira working some things out there as well, I think I'd maybe consider him as a $1 guy. But if they both come back, that Brewers lineup could start to wake up pretty quickly. That's a big switch with both of those guys in compared to their current replacements for them. So I'm looking at Hoffman and probably passing wherever I can, even though there were some glimmers of hope earlier this season. I think some of that early luster has faded. And then there's Nick Pivetta. He's out there in some 12-teamers at Toronto this week, which I don't like, and then at Atlanta next week. As much as he's maybe changed our perception of him early on, some of the underlying numbers still give me a little bit of pause with Pivetta. So I'm just curious what you're doing with a guy like that with this stretch of two tough matchups here these next 2 weeks.
Well, I'd favor him over Jose Urania. So
he's better than Urania. All right.
A better Urania. And I mean, you laugh, but I mean, I did say Urania would at least make the cut of pitchers I would consider in 15 teams and deeper. So he's not on the Miley level. If we want to talk about the Miley scale, Miley minor, those are preferable options for me. But I'd say Pivetta probably, would slide right behind Mike Minor for me. So probably not cracking the rotation, but if I've got some depth issues in a deeper league, I'd feel okay about starting Pivetta.
The key for me with Pivetta is that the walk rate is actually up quite a bit and the home run rate's way down. And I don't think I'm comfortable after 8 starts saying that he's figured out how to keep the ball in the park. And I realize, like, not being in Philadelphia anymore, that's a very homer-friendly park. So just leaving Philly brings that baseline down slightly. But I'm not buying a 0.63 homers per nine for him as something he's going to sustain going forward. I think he's at least a homer per nine, probably like more like 1.25 or more in that area. So he has to get that walk rate down before the home runs start to bite him. Otherwise, that correction is going to be ugly. It's going to be just, 5-plus ERA for a stretch of a couple of weeks. And this is the type of schedule where it can happen. So I think I agree with you. If you said you got to pick one, put it in your lineup between Pivetta and Urania, I'd probably trust Pivetta a little more because he's just more interesting. But I don't want to start either one of them if I can help it. Let's get to relievers. Not a huge group, but one pretty interesting development in Minnesota. Hansel Robles picked up his first save of the season on Saturday, Al. And ever since Alex Colomé lost that job, we've wondered if Taylor Rogers would be the guy all the time or the guy most of the time as part of a committee. I'm curious to know what you'd like to do in leagues where Hansel Robles is available this weekend.
Probably not doing more than a nominal bid, like less than 1%, if you're in a league that's that granular with fab money. But not zero, not zero. Like, I think it's got to be the kind of league where your options are pitchers who, the best they can probably hope for is getting a share of the save situation. And the thing is, if Rogers slumps or hurts or, something of that nature, then Robles, I feel pretty confident, is in next in line. And I like the skills that he's shown this year. And I felt like going into this year that we as a community sort of penalized him a little too much for last season. So I think if he gets opportunities, he'll take advantage of them. I just don't think there's likely to be a lot of opportunities, which is why I'm not going more than 1%.
All right, so you still trust Taylor Rogers to get most of those chances in Minnesota, or at least someone else, because of the committee approach, to be a big part of the plan. I think for me, the key difference with Robles now versus a year ago, fastball velocity is back up a little bit. I think he was at 95.5 last year. He was down almost 2 ticks from where he was in that 2019 breakthrough with the Angels. The other thing that's still there, though, in the profile that makes me think 2019 from a skill standpoint was an outlier, the walk rate is up over 5 per 9 right now. He was under 2 walks per 9 in that great season with the Angels. He's really never been under 4 in the last 5 seasons other than that 1 year. So I think you're getting a guy, if he ends up with the job at some point, you're getting a guy who's probably a bottom tier closer, but he's on a good team. So he plays up a little bit, right? And he misses bats. Like, I think he's a useful reliever, but I think he's also a volatile one because that walk rate for his career is in the 3.7 walks per 9 range. That's a pretty high walk rate for a high leverage reliever. So I think that's the one thing that kind of holds him back. Like, I'd be stunned if he ever had a run where he was a top 15 closer again, even if he had a job to call his own.
I think that's fair. But again, you don't need to reach that threshold to have value in most leagues.
Yeah, sometimes he's got to get the saves, and that's enough. And he misses some bats while doing it. So I would agree with you, a lower-end sort of pickup, but if you only have two sources of saves right now and just want to see if you can get lucky, I do think there's enough there. Robles is worth bidding on, at least in 15-team leagues, and anything deeper. We've been keeping an eye on the situation in San Francisco. Jake McGee has hit a couple of bumpy stretches lately. Is Tyler Rogers rosterable? Because it seems like any time Jake McGee falters or is unavailable, it's Tyler Rogers who gets the save opportunities in San Francisco.
Yeah, and I certainly am more interested in him than Robles in a 15-team league. I would be, if he's still out there, I'd be going probably at least 4% after Rogers, because I think that, aside maybe from one other reliever we're going to talk about in a minute here, that he's got the best chance to really accumulate some saves rest of season. And you know, Gabe Kapler said as much, I think, about 2 weeks ago, that Rogers would see more situations. So, you know, not a typical closer profile, but tons of ground balls, so he can certainly be effective.
Yeah, you can get away with that lower K rate if you keep the ball on the ground as much as Tyler Rogers does. I would say if both Robles and Rogers are available, similar bids, I think, on both players, maybe a little more on Tyler Rogers, but not going overboard here. I still think it's 1% to 2%. Nothing more than that really needs to happen at this point for me. I think that's a competitive enough bid to get it done. Let's talk about one guy I know you like because he came up earlier this week on Fantasy Baseball in 15. Michael Fulmer. Kind of seems like the Tigers are pushing him more into short relief at this point, which might be the next logical step in his career. And frankly, I think he could be a really good reliever. How much of a share of the save situations do you really expect him to get going forward? And I guess if you think about life beyond the next 2.5 months, is he even still a Tiger? Because if he gets traded, he's probably not a closer somewhere else, even though he could be a quality high-leverage option on a contending team.
Yeah, and so that probably limits his window for getting saves on a regular basis, because, yeah, I don't necessarily see Fulmer being a closer on another team. I mean, there's a scenario you could imagine where a team in the stretch really needs a closer to shore up their postseason chances, and maybe Fulmer could get a role that way. But I think he does get the role with the Tigers going forward. And given what the closer landscape looks like the last couple of years, I don't worry as much about what's going to happen, you know, July, August, and after. If you've got somebody who's got a chance to get regular saves in the very near future, I think you go a little bit aggressively after that person. And Fulmer looks, I mean, that's a situation in Detroit where it's just been begging for somebody to come in and take that role. And I think Fulmer is probably a week or two away from doing that.
And not to always be a cynic, but if they like Gregory Soto long-term, one way to keep Gregory Soto as cheap as possible is to let someone like Michael Fulmer close for a little while. So I would say these three are all pretty similar in terms of my shorter-term expectations. Handful of saves maybe in the next week or so. Fulmer probably has the best path to a larger role, at least for a little while. I think I get too caught up in thinking too much about August and September. It doesn't matter. If you get a dozen saves between now and then, and you end up spending 2 or 3% of your budget on Fulmer now, which might be all you have to do to get him, that pays off in a huge way. Great. He gets traded to a contender later. You got a dozen saves before that happened. You had a guy that was pacing out for almost 30 saves on your roster for a couple of months. Those guys are hard to find. So I think of these three, he might be the highest priority of the bunch. Again, not smashing the piggy bank and going wild here, but I do think if you're really hurting for saves, Fulmer could help out beyond the short term and end up surprising you with skills too. I think he could just be one of those guys that we were kind of bored with as a starter, but as a reliever, the numbers start to pop. The K rate goes up, you know, the velo plays up, the secondaries look really crisp. I could see that being the case for Michael Fulmer. All right, well, there you have it. We made it through, Al. Not the most inspiring group of pitchers this week. Not necessarily the best week of waiver wire pickups as a whole, but hopefully an enjoyable pod nonetheless.
I hope so, and wish everybody luck this week. And even with the relatively thin crop of players to pursue, some players that could help you at least in the short term.
Absolutely. On Twitter, he is at LMelchiorBB. I am at Derek Van Riper. If you'd like to drop us a line, fantasypods@theathletic is the email address. Tweets, of course, always welcome, though, too. That is going to wrap things up for this episode of the Athletic Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Under the Radar is back on Tuesday.